Hi, I'm Tara, and welcome to Les Two Books. Friends, I'm so excited because this week I am joined by Radcliffe. She's the author of more than 50 lesfic novels, including some of my very favorites, so I may end up fangirling. She is also the founder and publisher at Bold Strokes Books. Her latest book is Love on the Night Shift, which is part of the Rivers Community Romance series, and it is out everywhere now, so go and get it. Welcome, Radcliffe.
Hi, Tara. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So I've asked you here today so that you can share your journey with lesbian fiction. Where did that begin for you? How did you first discover it? And what did that mean to you?
For me, this has been a journey which is practically my entire life story. I'm one of the lucky ones who has been able to grow up with lesbian fiction as part of my life, although it wasn't there at the very beginning under that name, which I think is kind of really interesting, and I'll mention that in a minute. But I recently read a book that was set in 1968, and it was published as historical fiction, which made me laugh, because for me, that's not historical. It's actually part of my life's memories. And I read my first book that had lesbian characters before that time. It was in 1962, and I was, I should probably say, young. And it was written by Ian Bannon, and it was part of the Bebo Brinker Chronicles. Mm-hmm. And at that time, books with lesbian characters, or women loving women, or women in relationships, were being published by the mainstream publishers, and we now call them pulp fiction. But for me, that was the first time I'd ever seen a book that had two women in a romantic relationship. And it was the first time I ever saw anything in print or anywhere, really, that validated the feelings that I had about myself and what the emerging feelings that I was having growing up. 10 years later, I was in medical school. I lived in Philadelphia at the time. And Giovanni's Room, which is one of the oldest queer bookstores in the nation, had one storefront with one shelf with four books. And one of them was Sarah Aldridge's book, The Latecomer, which was the first lesbian novel that NIAID published. And it wasn't called a lesbian romance. It wasn't called a lesbian book. It was called a novel. They didn't start to call their lesbian romances lesbian for probably another 10 years. Then that's the first book that I saw that really showed lesbian fiction as we know it today, with a positive ending. It was a romance novel. So that's when I began vigorously searching the entire countryside. Every time I took a trip, I would look for a queer bookstore, a women's bookstore, and I would buy every single book that I could find that had lesbians in it. And for probably 20 years, NIAID was the major publisher of lesbian fiction, but not the only one. There were many, many small feminist presses, lesbian presses, and I literally read every single thing I possibly could and collected them all, and I still have them. I have probably 1,500 books that are first editions from the 1970s in my library. And wow. I have gay male stuff. I read everything I could find that was queer. I read lots of gay mysteries from the time, and I have all of those too. So I immersed myself in it because this was where I could see myself for the very first time. And I've continued to kind of, that's just part of my life. It's always been there.
Wow. You must just have an incredible collection.
I do. I have an amazing collection. You know, I have Catherine Forrest's first editions, and, you know, I have books that you can't even find anymore. You know, one copy, probably maybe 500 copies were published. And it was at the time, I wasn't thinking, oh, you know, this will be something really special in the future. I was thinking, this is something I can't let go of. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the world that I would like to live in. You know, these are the people that experience what I want to experience. And I treasure those books, and I still do. And I, you know, so they're all behind glass and safe.
Out of curiosity, because I just read all of Ann Bannon's books last year, what was that first one that you picked up?
I read Odd Girl Out. That was the first one. And I found it, I was 12. I found it probably in a drugstore because that's where you could buy them. Fawcett was publishing them. That was the major publisher of Pulp Fiction at the time. And I don't know, they cost 15 cents a quarter maybe. And I had no idea what I was buying. I read everything. I mean, most authors will tell you they're voracious readers. I mean, that's why we write for the most part, because we love words. And I read everything I could find. And I read it, and I knew that there was probably something that I shouldn't tell my parents about this book. So it lived in the back of the other books on my bookcase. Mm. But it was life-altering for me, because I was at that point where I had no idea that that was even a possibility. And yet here there was. I mean, and that's what our fiction is all about. It's about the possibility. It's about the promise. And I think that that's what makes it so significant for our community.
That's amazing. Yeah, when I picked it up, because I thought, okay, I've been hearing people talk about it. It's foundational. It's important. Okay, let's read it. And it just knocked my socks off. Like, the writing is still so crisp and clear, and in some ways still feels so relevant. Like, I just don't know how she did it. And she was so young.
She was. You know, I know Anne pretty well. I've been really fortunate to get to know her personally. And I've heard her story and I've heard her talk about this. And I know that people in today's world, and younger people in particular who read those books, can't quite understand why they were so important to us at the time. Because, and the people who wrote at that time say the same thing. They were very constricted and restrained as to what they could write and the kinds of endings that they could put in those books. And they weren't always uplifting. And they weren't always positive, quote unquote. But Anne will tell you that she got grocery bags full of letters coming to her house in the mail from women who were telling her how much it meant to her that they could see women loving women in these books. That was the message. And yes, the endings weren't always happy, because they were literally not allowed to write happy endings. But that's not what mattered to me. What mattered to me was the emotions between those two young women. That's what I remembered. And I think that historically, that's why these books are so important in the evolution of not only our genre, but our community.
Yeah. I think the thing that struck me about that ending is that although they didn't end up together, it still felt very positive to me, because it was such an empowering moment for Laura to say, I'm going to go and live my life and be happy and be true to myself.
Right.
And like, what a gift to so many people to see your relationship might not work out, but you are a whole and healthy and amazing person.
Absolutely. And that message is still just as pertinent today as it was in the 1960s. I mean, in the late 1950s, early 1960s, when these books were published, that message is what matters. And I think that's the most important thing, is we have so much power with what we write to write about things in the world today in ways that readers can relate to and be provoked by, be encouraged by. But ultimately, the message is always one of affirmation and validation about who we are and what we have the right to feel and who we have the right to become.
Mm-hmm. So how did you first start writing it?
Well, I was thinking about that, because I was thinking, well, when did I first start writing things about lesbians? And I was 10, but of course, I wasn't thinking in those terms, but I was writing stories about astronauts and sheriffs and women doing things that I would see guys doing on TV that I wanted to do. So they were like my pre-lesbian stories, because I was just a kid. I actually started writing works with lesbian romances essentially when I was a surgery resident. So that would have been in the late 70s, early 80s. is when I wrote my first full-length works. But I didn't write them because I thought I was going to publish them or anybody else was even going to read them. I just wrote them because I wanted to write stories that made me happy. And I was beginning to read them and see them published, but they weren't coming very fast. Maybe a couple every month or so. The first year, it was maybe once every 6 months. So I started writing because I needed that in my life. I needed to be able to see those stories. And so I wrote them. And nobody ever saw them. I wrote probably a couple a year. So that's when I started writing. Some of those have been published after I began actually a writing career and began publishing. But I wrote them because they made me feel good and they made me happy. And they filled a place in my life that needed to be filled. Sorry.
No, that is absolutely okay. And you write kind of everything. You have a bunch of standalone series. I think it's fair to say, like, you mainly write romance, but even within romance, you're writing different subgenres. Some of them are medical, some of them are paranormals, some of them are just standalone one shots. So why is that? Like, why do you find yourself going back to? I saw on your website that there's a new Provincetown book coming out later this year, and I did a little happy dance. I also did a little happy dance last year when you brought out a new book in the Honor series. The second lesfic book I ever read was Above All Honor. So that series is very meaningful to me personally. I remember like just glomming the whole series right away, everything that was out at that point. Sorry. Back to the actual point though. Can you talk a little bit about why it is that you write so broadly and that you do tend to come back to the same people and bring readers back to their friends, if you will?
Everything with me, and you're going to find out, is a long story because I always back up to the beginning.
Nobody will mind.
When I first started writing, first of all, I was completely unschooled. I didn't really know anything about writing. I knew a lot about story because I'd grown up with stories. And for me, it was all about telling a story. So I started writing stories that interested me, and I still do. And so the first story that I wrote was a Western, which was Innocent Hearts, because I grew up with Westerns and I wanted to write a Western hero. And the second story I wrote was Tomorrow's Promise. I wrote stories without really thinking about, is this a romantic intrigue? Is this a paranormal? I didn't think about any of that. I only thought about a story that interested me. And I didn't think about, am I any good at this or not? So in the beginning, I was writing standalones, and they were individual stories that interested me. I wrote Safe Harbor because I love Provincetown, and I was there during Women's Week, and I had an apartment on the bay at Dyer's, and I wrote most of it that week while I was there because I was inspired by being there. So I wasn't really thinking in terms the way an author ought to be thinking. Way I try to get authors to think, which is you really need to build a brand so your audience will kind of know what's coming. I wasn't thinking about any of that. I wrote Shield of Justice because I thought, oh, that'll be interesting to write a police procedural. Little did I know how difficult that would be. So I really started out merely writing stories. And as time went on, I started to get a readership. Well, once I actually started to put my works out there, which was years after I started writing these things, then readers would come back to me, and then I started to close the loop. When you write, you can write as much as you want, and you can put it anywhere you want. But when you're an author, when you're a published author, you put something else into the paradigm. You put the reader into the dynamic of your writing. There is someone at the end of the road who's going to read what you wrote. And then the feedback comes back to you. And readers really liked Above All Honor. And I started getting a lot of feedback. And I had never considered writing that as a series. I never considered writing any of them as a series. If I had, I would have done a better job picking character names so I wouldn't be tripping all over the same names and trying to figure out how to get around it. Another thing I tell authors is plan your series before you start. But I didn't do any of that, of course. So readers were saying they really liked Above All Honor. And that's why I wrote another one. I mean, it was really just because I was getting a lot of interest. That's not mm-hmm. always the best reason to continue a series. In fact, if you get 50 emails that tell you your book is great and somebody wants more, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a great idea to write a sequel, because that's only 50 people. But I did it because I thought there was interest, and I liked those characters, and I liked the fact that it allowed me to, there was some place to go with it. I had enough of a platform, enough of a stage that I could continue to write stories in that world. That's the real requirement for a series, is that you actually have somewhere to go. Promistown, same thing. I mean, I had enough secondary characters that I could bring in characters. So I had a geographic setting that would allow me to continue to write new stories on this platform. And so I think that's part of why I write series. They're popular for some readers, but not for others. I mean, the series always fall off. It doesn't matter how good you are or mm-hmm. how popular you are. They are always going to show a tailing down. Readers fatigue, and they forget, they move on. And some readers aren't interested in series, especially romance readers. They're interested in that first emotional journey. And once it's completed, they're not really interested in following those characters. Whereas other readers love those characters and are going to follow them forever. Mm-hmm. You know, the I'll read their grocery list kind of thing. So it's, I like writing both, but I do write series and come back to series if I think the readership is still there. If it's not there at this point in my career, and for any published author, you have to make the hard decision not to write anymore in that series. That's always tough.
Thank you for being an awesome listener and supporting Tilt, the channel that brings you all the podcasts you want to hear. You're listening to Tilt. Find more podcasts on thelesbiantalkshow.com.
All right, I'm going to ask a question that now I'm afraid I'm not going to like the answer to.
Are you going to ask me if it's going to be more in the honor series?
Related. It doesn't necessarily okay. have to be about the honor series. Are we ever going to see Valerie and Diane again?
Yeah, well, I mean, okay. Then that's kind of like the honor series. Let me tell you this. After probably the last four books in the honor series, every time I have sworn I would never write another one. Mm-hmm. They are really hard to write. It's exhausting. Mm-hmm. It's complicated. And it's like, every time I get done, it's like, okay, that's it. I'm done. I'm not writing another one. So I just said that after The Cost of Honor last year. So in a couple of years when I've gotten over, you know, how difficult it was to write that book, I may come back. And everybody's asking about Valerie and Diane. They're great characters. They're really fun. They're unusual. Mm-hmm. The Honor series has let me do a lot. That and the Justice series, which doesn't get as much press because it's a little more difficult because it's a police procedural, but it's let me do a lot with character. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been able to introduce a lot of sexual diversity, a lot of different relationship dynamics. So those two series have let me stretch, and that's part of the reason I like to write them too.
I would happily read a whole Diane and Valerie book. And I'm sure there are many.
Well, maybe I can do something with that. You're not the only person who's asked me about it. And I do listen to what people ask.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And what they don't, you know, I pay attention to what isn't as popular too. And I think that mm-hmm. as a author, I mean, who, you know, this is my work. I pay attention to what doesn't sell as well. And, you know, I ask myself, why? Is it story? Is it craft? And I think that's what any good author does, should mm-hmm. do.
So reading and writing fiction is one thing, but you're also a publisher, and not just a small publisher. Like, like you are leading one of the biggest, possibly the biggest, I don't know anybody's numbers, but you are leading one of the biggest presses that is specific to fiction about women who love women. I know there's also, I know there's also the boy books. I know there's also generally queer books, but all the people listening to this probably know you more for the lesfic. So how did that happen? What was that journey like?
That's been a great journey. And I am very, very fortunate. It was never anything that I ever imagined. I never imagined that I would write seriously, that I would publish, or that I would run a publishing company. When I was 8 years old, I decided I would be a doctor. And I never deviated from that. That was it for me. And I loved my surgical career. It was incredibly fulfilling. And there came a time in my life when the writing began to take a bigger part of my life. And I was at a crossroads. It's kind of, I always call it the perfect storm. I had gotten to a point where I was writing a lot more. And I had been published, which was kind of like a weird experience totally. I had put my stuff out there on my website for free and various other places as well. And then a couple of publishers contacted me and said, well, we'd really like to publish X story. And I thought about it and thought about it and thought, do I really want people touching my stuff? Because that's what publishing is all about. Somebody's going to touch your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. And I'm not sorry. It was that opened up a whole new world for me. And that's what I was talking about when I talked about readership, in that now there was a lot coming back to me. And I wasn't just writing alone in a room. There was a lot coming back from the outside world, and it opened up all kinds of possibilities for me. So in a very short span of time, literally over about 2 to 3 years, I published all of my backlist that I had written. So that got out there, and it was kind of like a mushroom effect. I started writing more. I also started learning a lot more about publishing, and that really fascinated me. And what I was seeing was what I perceived to be a limitation in the reach, where I couldn't get to as much of the audience as I wanted. And I was convinced that part of it was because I needed, and I'm going to say not me, and I'm not going to put this on anybody that published me or anything like that, but the reach needed to be bigger. There needed to be more visibility and more penetration. And the solution that I saw for that was to go with a mainstream model. So I established Bold Strokes Books from the beginning with a mainstream model, with a mainstream distribution network where I could get my books on the shelf in Barnes & Noble and Borders at the time and independent bookstores. And I had been having a problem with that, because I would go to Women's Week and I would go to Women's Craft and they didn't have my book. And they couldn't get my book because they couldn't get my book through the channels that they used to order books. And that was because way back then, 20 years ago or so, most of the publishers were using print on demand and booksellers would not buy them. Now, things have changed, but at the time, that was a limiting factor. So what I wanted to do was establish a publishing company that would allow the books to go everywhere that everybody else's books went with. There's a, you know, I'm echoing mm-hmm. the refrain mm-hmm. that we should have the same opportunity as everybody else. So I established my own publishing company, but I never wanted it to be just about me. I wanted to publish other authors, and I like to teach, and I like to lead teams. So all of those things worked. It's just like being in the operating room. I mean, basically, it's a team that works together. Everybody brings their own expertise. And together, you create something. And that's what, for me, that's what publishing is all about. I mean, the author, the publisher, the editors, the graphic artists, the marketing people. It's all a team effort. And that's the model that I wanted to work under and allow the people that I publish to have the same opportunity for their works to be distributed and marketed and made visible and purchased just like everybody else's.
I love it. I love it. So what do you think of where we are now as a reading and writing community, having seen the way it's grown? Is there anything that you're really excited about, and what do you think is the next frontier?
Well, I mean, right now, the way the world is, publishing is starting to get hurt a little bit, like everybody else's lives are starting to get hurt a little bit. And understandably so. I mean, Amazon, as I'm sure you know, has made it really clear they're not fulfilling book orders. They're not ordering. I read yesterday that Barnes & Noble has closed 400 of their stores temporarily, and they're doing like curbside fulfillment, which you know is not going to happen, which basically means they're not going to be ordering our books.
So just to clarify for listeners, we're recording this on March 28th. Listening to this in May. No, it's 100% okay. I just want people to understand. We're recording this in March, at the end of March. You'll be listening to this in May. God only knows what's going to happen there, because it feels like everything is moving at lightning speed. I apologize for cutting you off there.
Oh, no, that's okay. And in fact, I should have mentioned that. And it may be completely different, and we certainly hope that it will be. But I think all of us are kind of looking to the future and saying, what does this mean? And we don't really know. But I think that as bad as things are, and hopefully they'll be better when people are listening to this, we also have to think about, what do we need to do right now? And this is true at any time, any point in time. What do we need to do right now to reach out, to maintain our community, to support our community, and to keep our words and our work flowing? So I'm excited about right now, because I don't have a lot of choice, but I think it's something that we want to do continuing, is being able to reach readers in different ways. So we're working really a lot and very quickly to move into the virtual sphere of doing virtual readings, doing virtual symposia. We're working on one that's probably over by the time people have heard this, but it's going to be coming. And hopefully there will be more in the future where we can do author panels, author readings, author chats in virtual forums. So I think that that's a new area for us in terms of reaching out. In terms of what we're writing, I think that that's, we are certainly also at a watershed moment in our history where all of us are thinking much more about diversity in terms of character construction, the stories that we tell, the lives that we talk about. So I think that we're all very aware of the expanding world of what we write and what we write about. So I think in many ways, we're at the forefront of a new frontier.
Where can people find you online if they would like to connect with you?
Well, they can always email me, and I'm happy to give people my email address. The easiest way to reach any of us is to go to www.boldstrokesbooks.com, and all of the authors' contact information is there. You can just put in any author, and their contact information is available on their bio. We have a free newsletter, which keeps everyone up to date as to what we're writing, what we're releasing, and what we're doing. No obligation to just get it. So that we try to very hard to keep in contact all the time with our readership. So we're all right there at the click of a button.
That's all for this episode. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been great. And thank you for doing this.
I'm Tara, and you've been listening to Les Do Books. You can email me at tara@thelesbianreview.com with your questions or comments. If you're an author who's interested in joining me on the show to talk about the lesfic you love or the trends that have you interested, please let me know. If you've enjoyed this episode, please check out the show notes where you'll find a Patreon link for Tilt, or visit patreon.com/thelesbiantalkshow. Our patrons get exclusive content like bonus podcasts that no one else gets access to. To find this and many other great shows, all you need to do is search for Tilt, spelled T-L-T, on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, or Spotify.